late 1930s, there came into being a revolutionary group in the treatment of alcoholism to be called Alcoholics Anonymous. This group of chronic, unmanageable, compulsive users of alcohol had tested and failed every known human agency and method to attain a life of sobriety. It would seem that the suffering alcoholic was doomed to insanity and or death. However, through the sponsorship and guidance of the Oxford Group, our early AA fathers were presented with a set of fundamental spiritual concepts augmented with God's grace would remove the compulsion and the obsessive need to drink and set in place good orderly directions for living with sobriety. The miracle of God's gift of sobriety was now exemplified by former sufferers, and the message of recovery was for anyone that desired a change to build a new life by pursuing a new dimension of noble ideals and spiritual forces that would lead us to a union with God and a place in His plans. As one who was privileged to have known the founders and early members of both the Oxford and AA groups, I will be eternally grateful for their humility, dependence on God, and the love and unselfishness by sharing their experience, strength, and hope that we who are to follow can live in the fellowship of the Spirit and know God's truth. I shall always believe that I was exposed to and led to AA through divine guidance. It was the right time, the right place, the right group, the right sponsor, and by the grace of God, the miracle of sobriety and a new life was now mine. Love freely offered had been freely taken. Since I am now a member of an exclusive group of 40 plus years of sobriety, whose ranks are rapidly thinning, I find a solid comfort in exchanging views and experiences with those few still active about the moments of truth, incidents, information, and wisdom that have been the basic elements in my recovery. In retrospect, it seems that a life of sobriety, joy, and freedom is the product of structuring and simplifying the spiritual principles. The more we structure the spiritual principles, the freer we become. Keep it simple. At this point in time, I can, with some objectivity, examine the past and bring forth the basic elements of truth and wisdom and learning to structure the spiritual guides and principles. I will not attempt to comment on the 12 steps of how it works, the 12 traditions of why it works, the 12 promises of goals and guarantees, the 12 concepts dealing with the welfare and the protection of the fellowship, because I consider them to be inviolate. Each facet must be approached by each one of us in our own way and in God's time. In the foregoing, I spoke about the 12 steps and the 4 absolutes of the spiritual principles of our program. The 12 steps represent our philosophy. The 4 absolutes represent our self-help objectives to establish our relationship with God. The 4 absolutes on how to listen in prayer and meditation were borrowed from the Oxford Group back in the days when we were seeking help and guidance to formulate a useful, happy, and a significantly sober life. If you will revisit the 12 steps with care, you will find the 4 absolutes to be the theme which is discernible in a sober life of quality. How to listen in prayer and meditation, as specifically called for in our 10th and our 11th step, suggests a method and a medium to communicate with God that we will know His truth and power to practice that which is good. The 4 absolutes. The 4 absolutes consist of absolute honesty, absolute unselfishness, absolute love, absolute purity. And because the absolutes are not specifically repeated in our steps or traditions, some of us are inclined to forget or ignore them. This premise is approximately as sound as it would be to suggest that the Holy Bible should be scuttled. Yet in many old-time groups where the solid spirit of our fellowship is so strongly exemplified, the absolutes receive frequent mention. Indeed, you often find a set of old placards carefully preserved which are trotted out for prominent display each meeting night. There could be a unanimity on the proposition that living our way of life must include not only an awareness but a constant striving towards greater achievement in the qualities which the absolutes represent. Now about the honesty absolute. Over and over we must ask ourselves, is it true or is it false? For honesty is the eternal search for truth. It is by far the most difficult of the four absolutes for anyone, but especially for us in this fellowship. The problem drinker develops genuine artistry and deceit. Too many, and we plead guilty. Simply turn over a new leaf and relax. That is wrong. The real virtue in honesty lies in the persistent, dedicated striving for it. There is no relaxed twilight zone. It's either full speed ahead, constantly, or it's not honesty we seek. And the unrelenting pursuit of truth will set you free, even if you don't quite catch up to it. We need not choose to pursue falsity. All we need is to relax our pursuit of truth, and falsity will find us. The search for truth is the noblest expression of the soul. Let a human throw the engines of his soul into the doing or making of something good, and the instinct of workmanship alone will take care of his honesty. The noblest pleasure we can have is to find a great new truth and discard an old prejudice. When act is not actively sought, truth seldom comes to light, but falsehood does. Truth is life, and falsity is spiritual death. It is an everlasting, unrelenting instinct for truth that counts. Honesty is not a policy. It has to be a conscious, constant state of mind. Accuracy is close to being a twin brother of honesty, but inaccuracy and exaggeration are at least kissing cousins of dishonesty. We may bring ourselves to believe almost anything by rationalization, another of our fine arts. And so it's well to begin and end our inquiry with the questions, is it true? Any man who loves to search for truth is precious to any fellowship or society. Any intended violation of honesty stabs the health of not only the doer, but the whole fellowship. On the other hand, if we are honest to the limit of our ability, the basic appetite for truth in others, which may be dormant but not dead, will rise majestically to join us. Like sobriety, it's the power of example that does a job. It is much simpler to appear honest than to be honest. We must strive to be in reality what we appear to be. It is easier to be honest with others than with ourselves. Our searching self-inventories help because the man who knows himself is at least on the doorstep of honesty. Our instinct for exhibitionism, even though held in check, is a form of honesty. When we try to enhance our stature in the eyes of others, dishonesty is there in the shadows. When falsehood even creeps in, we are getting back on the merry-go-round because falsehoods not only disagree with truth, they quarrel with each other. Remember? It is one thing to devoutly wish that the truth may be on your side, and it's quite another to wish sincerely to be on the side of truth. Honesty would seem to be the toughest of our four absolutes, and at the same time, the most exciting challenge. Our sobriety is a gift, but honesty is a grace that we must earn and constantly fight to protect and enlarge. Is it true or false? Let us make that a ceaseless question that we try to answer with all the sober strength and intelligence we have. Absolute unselfishness. At first blush, unselfishness would seem to be the simplest of all to understand, define, and accomplish. But we have a long road to travel because ours was a real mastery of the exact opposite during our drinking days. A little careful thought will show that unselfishness in its finest sense, the kind for which we must strive for in our way of life, is not easy to reach or describe in detail. In the final analysis, it must gain for us the selflessness which is our spiritual cornerstone, the real significance of our anonymity. Proceeding with the question method of digesting the absolute, we suggest you ask yourself over and over again in judging what you are about to do, say, think, or decide, how will this affect the other fellow? Our unselfishness must include not merely that which we do for others, but that which we do for ourselves. I once heard an old-timer say that this was a 100% selfish program in one respect, namely that we had to maintain our own sobriety and its quality before we could possibly help others in a maximum degree. Yet we know we must give of ourselves to others in order to maintain our own sobriety, in the spirit of complete selflessness, with no thought of reward. How do we put these two things together? Well, for one thing, it points up that we shall gain in direct proportion to the real help we give others. How many of us make hospital calls simply because we think we need to do it to stay sober? Those who think only of their own need and who reflect little on the question of doing the fellows at the hospital some genuinely good are missing the boat. We know, for we used to make hospital calls in much the same way that we took vitamin pills. Then one day in our early sobriety, we were asked to call on a patient. Never will we forget the anxiety on the way to that nursing home. And after nearly 2 hours of earnest talk, we left, worried about whether we had helped or hurt, or perhaps had accomplished nothing at all. Some of those questions stayed with us. We thought of better answers later on and returned to see him several times. We are helped on our long journey to unselfishness by our great mission of understanding, which sometimes seems as precious as the gift of sobriety itself. But the quality cannot be confined alone to that which we do for others. We must be unselfish even in our pursuits of self-preservation. Not the least of our aid to others comes from the example of our own lives. Is there any protection against that first drink which equals our thought of what it might do to others? Those with unselfish love guided us in the beginning, and those who we in turn later guided, we are often reminded of the last verse of an anonymous poem. I must remember as I go through sober days, both high and low, what I must always seem to be for him who always follows me. Absolute love. We often learn more by questions than answers. Did you ever hear a question that caused you to think for days or even weeks? The questions which have no easy answer are often the key to the truth. However, in this series on the Four Absolutes, we are concerned with the questions we should be asking ourselves over and over again in life. The integrity of our answer to these questions will determine the quality of our life, may even determine the continuance of our sobriety. A good question to ask ourselves on love might be, is it ugly or is it beautiful? We are experts on ugliness. We have really been there. We are not experts on beauty, but we have tasted a little and we are hungry for more. Love is beauty. Coming from the depths of fear, physical agony, mental torture, and spiritual starvation, we feel completely unloved, impregnated with self-pity, poisoned by resentment, and devoured by a powerful ego with which alcohol has brought complete blindness. We receive understanding and love from strangers, and we make progress as we in turn give it to new strangers. It's as simple as that. Fortunately for us, love is inspiring from the very beginning, even in kindergarten, which is where many of us still are. The old song tells us that love is a many splendored thing. In giving it, we receive it. But the joy of receiving can never match the real thrill of giving. Consider that this great mission of love, which is ours, is seldom experienced by the non-alcoholic. And you have a new reason for gratitude. Few are privileged to save lives. Fewer have the rich experience of being God's helper in the gift of the second life. Love is a poor man's beginning towards God. We reach our tall step when we give love to the new man who is poor today as we were poor yesterday. A man too proud to know he is poor has turned away from God with or without alcohol. We have been there too, but if he has a drinking problem, we can show him the way through love, understanding, and our own experience. When we live for our own sobriety, we again become beggars in spiritual rags, lying once again with the dust of pride and self. Soon we shall be starving with the hunger of devouring ourselves, perhaps even lose sobriety. Love is giving of yourself, and unless we do, our progress will be lost. Each one owes the gift of this second life of sobriety to every other human being he meets in the ceaseless presence of God, and especially to other alcoholics who still suffer. Not to give of himself brings the desolation of a new poverty to the sober alcoholic. When we offer love, we offer our life. Are we prepared to give it? When another offers us love, he offers his life. Have we the grace to receive it? When love is offered, God is there. Have we received him? The will to love is God's will. Have we taken the third step? Ask yourself, is it ugly or is it beautiful? And if it's truly beautiful, then it is the way of love. It is the way of AA. It is the will of God as we understand him. Absolute purity. Purity is simple to understand. Purity is flawless quality. Gerard Groot, in his famous 14th century book of meditation, had an essay entitled A Pure Mind and Simple Intention, in which he says, by two wings a man is lifted up from things earthly, namely by simplicity and purity. Simplicity does tend towards God, purity does apprehend and taste it. Purity is a quality of both the mind and heart, and perhaps we should say the soul of man. As far as the mind is concerned, it is a simple case of answering the question, is it right or is it wrong? That should be easy for us. There is no twilight zone between right and wrong. Even in our drinking days, we knew the difference. With most of us, knowing the difference was the cause or part of the cause of our drinking. We did not want to face the reality of doing wrong. It isn't in the realm of the mental aspects of purity that our main problem lies. We can answer all the questions quoted above to the best of our ability and give the correct answer. It's in the realm of the heart and the spirit we face difficulty. We know which is right, but do we have the dedicated will to do it? Just as the real desire to stop drinking may exist to make our way of life effective for us, so we must have a determined desire to do that which we know is right. And if we are to achieve any measurable degree of purity, it has been well said that intelligence is discipline. In other words, knowledge means little until it goes into action. We knew we should not take that first drink, remember? Until we translate our knowledge into the action of our own lives, the value of it is existence. We are not intelligent under such circumstances. So it is with the decency of our lives, we know what is right, but unless we do it, the knowledge is a haunting vacuum. In discussing unselfishness, we mentioned that it included more than just doing for others. We repeat that it includes all that we do, since much of our help to others comes through our own example. Nowhere is this more true than in the decency and the rightness of our lives. Were we to contemplate the peace and contentment that a pure conscience would bring to us, and the joy and help that it would bring to others, we would be more determined about our spiritual progress. If our surrender under the third step has not been absolute, perhaps we should give the 11th step more attention. If you have turned your will and your life over to God as you understand him, purity will come to you in due course, because God is good. Let us just not tend towards God, let us taste of him. In purity, as in honesty, the virtue lies in our striving, and like seeking truth, giving our all in this constant pursuit, we will make us free, even though we may never quite catch up to it. Such pursuit is a thrilling and challenging journey. The journey is just as important as the destination, however slow it may seem. as it is said, in living as in knowing, be intent upon the purest way. Summarizing the four absolutes, our consideration of the absolutes individually leads us to a few conclusions. The 12 steps represent our philosophy. The absolutes represent our objective and self-help and the means to attain them. Honesty, being the ceaseless search for truth, is our most difficult and yet most challenging objective. It is a long road for anyone, but a longer road for us to find the truth. Purity is easy to determine. We know what is right and wrong. Our problem here is the unrelenting desire to do that which is right. Unselfishness is the stream in which our sober life must flow, the boulevard down which we march triumphantly by the grace of God, ever alert against being sidetracked into a dark, obscure alley along the way. Our unselfishness must penetrate our whole life, not just our deeds for others, for the greatest gift we bestow on others is the example of our own life as a whole. Love is the medium, the blood of the good life, which circulates and keeps alive its worth and beauty. It is not only our circulatory system within ourselves, but it is our medium of communication to others. The real virtue is in our striving for these absolutes. It is a never-ending journey, and our joy and happiness must come each step of the way, not at the end, because the end is endless. Cicero said, if you pursue good with labor, the labor passes and the good remains. But if you court evil through pleasure, the pleasure passes and the evil remains. Our life is a diary in which we mean to write one story and usually write quite another. It is when we compare the two that we have our humblest hour. But let's compare through our self-industry and make today a new day. Men who know themselves have at least ceased to be fools. Remember, if you follow the golden rule, it's always your move too. To love what is true and right and not to do it is in reality not to love. And we are trying to face reality, remember? The art of living in truth and right is the finest of fine arts, and like any fine art, must be learned slowly and practiced with incessant care. We must approach this objective of the absolute humbly. We pray for these things and sometimes forget that these virtues must be earned. The gates of wisdom and truth are closed to those wise in their conceit, but ever open to the humble and to the teachable. To discover what is true and to practice what is good are the two highest aims in life. If we would love, if we would be humble, we would not stoop, but rather we should stand to our fullest height, close to our highest power that shows us what the smallness of our greatness is. Remember our four questions. Is it true or false? Is it right or wrong? How will this affect the other fellow? And is it ugly or beautiful? Answering these queries every day with absolute integrity and following the dictates of those answers, one day at a time, will surely lead us well on our journey towards absorbing and applying the absolutes. Now about prayer and meditation. The 9 steps on how to listen is not offered as the only way, as the state of the art is different for each of us. However, how to listen is offered as a basis for prayer and meditation that will make and discover that the way of love is the way of AA and the will of God as we understand Him. But everybody longs for a union with God, and those of us who have tried to improve our conscious contact with God by using human wisdom and knowledge have failed. But God has a plan. God can show you what to do, not in a vague general way, but in a practical way that makes life different and gives you a new direction. Some people do not believe in God. It can work for them too, because for all of us, it is an experiment. Many people pray, but they do all the talking. God gave man 2 ears and 1 mouth, so why don't we listen twice as much as we talk? Step 1, take time. Take time in the early morning. If you want to establish a union with God, you have to take time to find the right plan. The early morning seems to be the best time to tune up our lives. Open your heart to God, write down the thoughts that come to you. Step two, take paper and pencil. God is always speaking. How can you listen? Here's the answer. You write it down so that you can listen better and you can remember His words. It is practical. You decide to live by and strive for a set of absolute moral standards. You are quiet. You write down the thoughts that come. Step three. Is every thought you get a thought from God? Certainly not. Most of us have been in touch with the wrong sources of information for a long time. They influence us. So we need to test our thoughts. A. Are they in line with absolute honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love? B. Are they in love with our real duties, domestic, business, social, community, country, and mankind? C. There is a test of other minds. More light comes in through two windows than one. When in doubt, look for direction with others who have wholeheartedly opened their minds to God. Step four, talk over what you have written. Talk with your spouse, sponsor, members of the group, and if need be, a spiritual advisor. There are three sides to every question: your side, my side, and the right side. Guidance shows which is the right side, not who is right, but what is right. Step five, what if two or more people get different ideas? Be honest about your motives. Have further quiet. Thoughts may come showing where disunity has come in, our lack of honesty, our lack of trust. Put these right. The united plan is not hard to find. It will come. Step six. Carry out the thoughts that have come. You will only be sure of guidance as you carry it out. You cannot prove that a rudder will guide a ship until the ship is moving. But anyone determined to change and build a new life can find in the silence the way to go forward. It is in the silence that we are reborn. Step seven. What if no guidance comes? Generally, there is an answer. Here are some of the blocks to guidance. A. Any wrong relationship in my life? B. Any wrong that I have not faced and put right? C. Any compromise or indulgence I will not give up? D. Anything I know I should do and have not done? Put these things right and try again. Step 8. What are the results? A growing number in our fellowship are committing themselves to take time in the morning, in quiet, to find the way. They are being renewed. Lives are being united. A new dimension of noble ideals and spiritual forces are now in place, and you have a place in God's plan. When man listens and obeys, God speaks and acts. Step 9. A new life and world can be ours. If we will listen and carry out His plan, we can have a new and exciting life. To continue to improve our conscious contact with God, we must strive to take our personal inventory and maintain a clear and clean conscience as called for in our 10th step. Through prayer and meditation, God's will be revealed. And if we are painstaking about the 11th step, we will have knowledge of His plan and the power to practice the principles of love, honesty, unselfishness, and purity in all of our affairs as set forth in the 12 steps and join in the fellowship of the Spirit. Unfortunately, in these later years, we have been assaulted and subjected to alien philosophies and quasi-scientific theories that are not improving and have not improved the prospects for attaining and maintaining a life of sobriety. While it is said that the new person is the lifeblood of our fellowship, I strongly suggest that without a strong, enthusiastic, vigorous effort to recapture our lost position and interest in the 12-step work, also personal and group sponsorship, we will become the treatment centers, encounter groups, and dumpsters. The new person's chances are no better than the quality of the individual and group leadership, and the obvious answer is to return to the tried and true principles of love and service as it was practiced in the beginning. Dr. Bob made the statement in his last address in Cleveland when he spoke to us about keeping the program simple. Bob's farewell address was very emotional, and most of us knew that he was terminal and soon to die. As he stood and looked about him, he mentioned how grateful it was that he had had an opportunity to look and see us and deliver a message. He began his message by saying, "My good friends in AA, there are two or three things that flashed into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up with frightening complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is. We understand what service is. So let's bear those two things in mind. Let us also remember to guard the erring member of the tongue, and if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing, none of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to do numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get such a degree of smug complacency that we are not willing to extend or attempt to extend to our less fortunate brothers that help which has been so beneficial to us." And he thanked us and sat down. Like most of us there, I was transfixed. I knew that I had heard and been at the moment of truth. The message of love and service, I now understood. This beautiful man will live in the hearts of all of us for all times. His vision and wisdom guided us through the troubled times when we were seeking information to formulate and define our relationships and the course of action to govern our members and the groups in the pursuit of those novel ideals of love and service. His acts of love, unselfishness, purity, and honesty in all of his affairs is still with us. And for this, we thank God. And now let me close with the Serenity Prayer by Reinhold Niebuhr. The Serenity Prayer in its entirety is the epitome and the essence of our spiritual philosophy and concepts. It places us in the now and assures us that if we strive to think and act in harmony with God's will, that we can trust Him to make all things right. Surely God is good. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace, taking as He did this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting He will make all things right if I surrender to His will, that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with Him forever in the next. Amen. The materials that have been recorded on this tape have been presented at random and represents only personal expressions and information that have reinforced and aided me in improving my relationship with God and my fellow man. I sincerely hope that some part of this material will be of value to you and yours, as it has been for me.
Please stop the cassette here, remove it from your recorder, rotate the hub to eliminate any slack in the tape, then turn it over for side two.
I was very pleased to receive an invitation to speak at a Midwest AA conference. With the program format stating that I was to speak Sunday morning as an AA speaker, it was due to be an all-timer share. The chairman opened the meeting with the usual statements and amenities, and my host rose to introduce me, and I was startled to hear him refer to me as a pioneer. And he quoted the page part named Pioneers of AA Stories in our AA book to follow. Today, hundreds of additional AA members can be found who have had no relapse for 30 years. All of these, then, are the pioneers of AA. They bear witness that relief from alcoholism can really be permanent. While it is true that society in general now has a better realization of the gravity of the alcoholic problem, nevertheless, at present, it reflects and presents us with complexities that may be beyond our purview and experience. There could be unanimity on the premise that keeping the program simple is the key and our spiritual cornerstone, and has to be a constant conscious state of mind if we are to be effective in dealing with the primary problem, the disease of alcoholism. Unfortunately, government, various agencies and institutions have only superficial information about AA, its basic tenets and objectives to recover in the third life. Our program of recovery is designed for the alcoholic who wants it, rather than those who need it. However, many who are come to us with ulterior motives and purposes find a new truth, discard our ideas and prejudices, and join us in the realm of the spirit. And so, as an active pioneer with 42 years of sobriety, I was delighted to share my experience and personal relationships with and about the founding members in the Cleveland and Akron area, historically known as the Cradle of AA. These early members gave me their unqualified and unconditional love and understanding. And through their unselfish efforts, guided me and sponsored me out of the depths of fear, physical agony, mental torture, spiritual starvation, desolation, and the hopeless conditions of the suffering alcoholic. I will be eternally grateful to those early pioneers whose honesty, unselfish love, and purity guided me through a series of spiritual experiences, awakenings, and the ultimate regeneration, thereby establishing a personal relationship with the God of my understanding. Upon reflection, I find myself ever returning to those moments of truth, the benchmark of my release from alcoholism, to relive the events and times and the mystical forces that brought about my recovery, the gift of the second life. In these latter years, there has been a conscious pursuit and ever-increasing appreciation of the real virtue of simplicity and purity, those qualities of both the heart and mind that is so strongly exemplified in a useful, happy, and significant sober life. Whenever I had the opportunity to share my faith, experience, and hope with the group of fellow speakers lecturing,
I found a solid comfort and an ongoing deepest meaning and appreciation in relating the story of my recovery, and how my sponsors patiently and lovingly explained and guided me through the 12 steps of our philosophy, the spiritual concepts of the Four Absolutes, and the objectives for self-help. These early members knew the real thrill and joy in giving. They were living witnesses to the great fact that a thought God put in them opened the gates to wisdom and truth, and that great events would come to pass for those who would join us in the fellowship of the Spirit. Since I am one who has truly accepted that which was so freely given to me, I have a joyful obligation and a sense of urgency to carry the message and to pass on the time-tested experiences of those who have gone before to those that are to follow. And so it is with deep satisfaction that the new as well as old members are expressing an interest and a hunger for the basic spiritual guiding principles that were so successfully implemented by our founding members. Today, as never before, the pioneers, old timers, or any sober practitioners of the spiritual principles, willing to share their experiences, are needed to show the way through love and understanding to those strangers and newcomers seeking the precious gift of sobriety. Admittedly, it is a very personal matter and a difficult task to articulate the spiritual concepts that are manifested through and by the grace of God, that we may live in harmony with His will. However, on this morning, I ask for the indulgence of the conscience to offer a comprehensive interpretation of what it was like, what happened, and how those noble ideals of love and service are as valid today as they were in the beginning. And it is to this theme that I shared my experiences. My release from the disease of alcoholism began with a 12-step call, carrying the message that alcoholism was a treatable disease, and that only a honest and sincere desire was needed to stop drinking. And if I would yield and give myself to the program as they had, a wonderful life would be mine. And I was amazed at their claims. However, intuitively, I knew that they spoke the truth. And I willingly moved from my isolation to accept their fellowship in a new and unbelievable way of life. By the sharing process, I now related, identified, and accepted without reservation the unmanageability, powerlessness, and insanity of my disease of alcoholism. I had now complied both in mind and heart with steps 1 and 2, and so the first phase of my recovery was now in place. The second phase of my recovery began at the completion of about 4 months of sobriety. And while I was deeply grateful for this reprieve, I was suffering from the unmanageability and the compulsion that was stimulated by my physical addiction. I had diligently practiced the HALT system, H-A-L-T, of not getting too hungry, too angry, too lonesome, or too tired. However, doubts and fears of impending doom were now creeping in, and the moment of truth was at hand. My desire and the spiritual energy of the group that had aided and abetted me in attaining and maintaining my sobriety for these past 4 months was waning. The awful truth was that sobriety was not enough. A conference with my group and sponsors revealed that it was time to undergo a spiritual regeneration that would result from a series of spiritual experiences as set forth in each of the steps 3 through 9. And in concert with my sponsors and the reinforcement of the group, the spiritual exercises would and did remove the barriers between myself, my fellow man, and the God of my understanding. The compulsion is now diffused, and my life is now manageable. I have indeed established a consciousness and a relationship to the loving God. I was now enjoying my new life and participating in the rewards and benefits of the 12 promises. And so the second phase of my recovery was now in place. The third phase of my recovery began with confidence and enthusiasm. I had achieved a level of comfort and emotional stability. The compulsion had been removed. I was now achieving positive results in all my affairs. That group of steps, three through and including nine, had indeed dealt with the solution and good orderly directions from my higher power would now guide me through the future. I had admitted my faults to God and my fellow man, cleared away the wreckage of the past, and entered the world of the Spirit. I was anxious to maintain, grow, and improve my conscious contact with the loving God. And so I embraced and implemented the 10th belongings in the 12th step as a method to maintain and improve my spiritual health and condition. I understood that separately each of these steps provided relief and benefits so that we could live happily and successfully. However, in spite of my apparent success in living with sobriety, something was missing. I secretly wondered about God's guidance and will, and did ignore human wisdom and intellect. Can God really direct you in a practical rather than a vague general way? I shared my confusion with other members and was surprised to find that I was not alone in the quandary. There were some that accepted the notion that what was happening at the moment was God's will, and some that God's will was to be expressed to others. Even the occult and exotic philosophies had been tried to no avail. I was uneasy and felt that I had reached an impasse or plateau in my spiritual development. Shortcomings and defects were cropping up. Inexperience and improper use of the will was leading me to rely more and more on my own intellect and reason. No matter how objective I tried to be, my efforts to cope were far from satisfactory. Also, I had observed others at this point in the program who became bored or ignored or lost interest in further actions and information. Their enthusiasm waned, meetings were curtailed, funds strayed away, and were lost forever. The action of willingness to go to any length came to mind. If we had been painstaking about the first and second phases of our recovery, it would come as no surprise that dealing with life from our own viewpoint at best obscures the truth and blinds us to reality. And those of us that have relied on our human judgment and wisdom have failed in knowing and carrying out God's will. In keeping with our philosophy of one day at a time, careful consideration should be given to steps 10, 11, and 12 as they plan for living one day at a time. And so if we are to formulate a plan for living daily, we should, in all humility, acknowledge the greatest gift of love that God gave man as a gift of the free will. However, if we are to reach for and strive for a lofty set of moral standards and noble ideals, we recognize that the proper use of our will is needed to practice the spiritual concepts of honesty, unselfishness, love, and purity. The four absolutes that are the guideposts to the finest and highest objectives known to mortal man. In essence, the plan for daily living should consider the 10th, 11th, and 12th steps dealing with our inventory, meditation, and prayer to be related, interwoven, and directly linked as a group rather than to be practiced separately. It has been well said that intelligence is discipline. We are determined to embrace the daily plan that we may move towards and realize our spiritual objectives. The tenth step, continue to take personal inventory and when we well promptly admitted it, served as a safety valve and enabled me to preserve good relationships with others. Restitutions and amendments were made if needed. There was no question about keeping the past cleaned up. However, I knew that I needed to go further and more action and information would be required if I was to know and carry the vision of God's will into all of my activities. The third phase of my recovery deals with the daily inventory, meditation, and prayer that provides a method and structure to guide us from a consciousness of God to a conscious contact with God, that we may know His will and direction to establish and strive for a set of absolute moral standards. We begin by reviewing the experiences of the day, the things we did that we were ashamed of, and the things that we should have done and didn't, the errors of commission and omission. We are careful to avoid moral introspection, self-deceit, and rationalization. The four absolutes offer a frame of reference that we can objectively analyze our conduct. Our failure to act in a loving manner results in hate and resentment. Failure to act in an unselfish way results in selfishness. Failure to act in an honest way results in falsity and deceit. Failure to act in a pure and simple manner results in manipulation and bad motives. The errors of commission are the direct result of the improper use of our will, with the shortcomings and defects reflecting the negative side of our nature. We ask God to remove our errors and to forgive us. The errors of omission are the direct result of lack of will and dedication and reflect apathy and complacency. Failure to use the guideposts of honesty and selfishness, love and purity in all of our affairs creates a void quickly filled by our self-will, shortcomings, and defects. We are no longer living in and on the high moral standards and spiritual plane that once were our objectives. We are now convinced that no matter how resolutely we try to control our negative nature, the more self-centered we become. We are in need of strength, inspiration, and direction from God, who has all knowledge and power. At this point, the 11th step sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. As we understand Him, praying only for knowledge of His will and the power to carry it out offers the information and action that will place us in the world of the Spirit, that we may meditate and pray that our apathy and complacency be removed. We recognize that our apathy and lack of willpower to practice the principles open the gates and the negative side of our nature welcome the self-will, shortcomings, and defects, isolating us from God and our fellow men. My inventory revealed a shocking lack of will and dedication towards absorbing and applying the absolute. And while I long for the guidance and strength coming from a union with God, it would only be through meditation and prayer that I would be given good, orderly direction to think and act in the harmony with God's will. In preparation for effective meditation and prayer, we must place ourselves in a spiritual atmosphere and mood in which we can focus undisturbed on God's guidance and the way to go forward. We carefully read and recite the serenity prayer that expresses and surrounds us with a spiritual grace. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace, taking as He did the sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting he will make all things right if I surrender to his will, that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with him forever in the next. We quietly purge the mundane and distractions of the day. It is then that our hearts and minds are cleared. And in thoughtful reflection, we review this beautiful prayer, drinking in every word and trying to visualize and understand its deeper meaning and inner essence. And so, in the peace and quiet that follows our meditation, we pray to God for inspiration, decision, and intuitive thoughts. A childhood ditty comes to mind. God has a plan, you have a part. When man listens, God speaks. When man obeys, God acts. God can show you what to do. In the silence, we have now begun to sense the flow of God's Spirit to us. We listen for the intuitive thoughts that come to us and wonder if they are truly thoughts from God. Now we can be sure that these thoughts are in line with the absolute, honesty, unselfishness, love, and purity, and our real duties, family, and country. No longer would I presume that certain intuitive thoughts to be from God and result in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. As a result of a structured inventory, meditation, and prayer, my confused thinking and motives had been cleared. My thought life was now on a higher plane. The 12 steps, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry the message and practice the principles in all of our affairs. And in accordance with my meditation and prayers, I was now ready to use my mental faculties at God's direction to carry the message of love and service to other alcoholics. I learned to know God's will and to practice the principles of honesty, unselfishness, love, and purity in all my affairs. We pray that we be given what others need to remove our apathy and complacency, that we may be free to practice these principles in harmony with God's will. The plan for living daily is not a one-time thing. Phase 3 of our recovery is to continue for our lifetime. We vigorously monitor our will to practice the principles which represent our philosophy, while the absolutes represent our spiritual objectives and self-help to place us in a new dimension for living by striving towards greater achievements and the qualities that the absolutes represent. We pray that we may grow in understanding and effectiveness in the constant and ceaseless search for truth, that we may become honest. The dedicated will to do that which is right, that will gain for us purity, the quality of both the heart and mind, or perhaps the soul of man. Unselfishness is our spiritual cornerstone, and we gain in proportion to the real help we give others. Love is beauty, the blood of the good life which keeps alive its worth and beauty, and is our medium to communicate with God and our fellow man. The art of living in truth and right is a fine art, and must be learned slowly and practiced with incessant care. The real virtue is in our striving for these absolutes. We pray for these things and sometimes forget these virtues must be earned. Remember our four questions. For honesty, is it true or false? For purity, is it right or wrong? For unselfishness, how will it affect the other thoughts? For love, is it ugly or beautiful? Answering these queries every day and following the dictates of those answers one day at a time will surely lead us to the universal truth. When love is offered, God is there. And when love is honest, unselfish, and pure, then it is truly beautiful. And it is the way of love, the way of AA, and is the will of God, as we understand.
We have been told that God will constantly disclose more to us if our house is in order. We can only be sure of God's guidance as we have carried it out. God can show you what to do. As a true believer, all that I offer is by way of discourse. Advice, none at all, and I shall not speak so boldly as it were my due to be believed. However, by the grace of God, I am to share my personal experience as a witness to God's guidance, power, and love. And to this end, I have recorded 3 tapes. The first tape, entitled An Old Timer Shares, is the story of my recovery. The second tape, entitled Lest We Forget, covers the 4 absolutes and related subjects. The third tape, entitled A Plan for Living Daily, deals with our place in God's plan and the AA way of love and service. These 3 tapes are offered in gratitude to those pioneers whose mission to save lives is being carried on and on and on, that we who are to follow will have the gift of a second life. Sincerely, Paul E. Keeblis.